Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Grace, and today's show is actually a really special crossover episode. Did you know that we have a podcast specially tailored for recently engaged or married couples? Yeah, this podcast is called our After Cana podcast, and it provides insights that guide our couples through the early stages of family life, and they explore the vocation of marriage through stories, advice, and insights from experts and couples who have been married for a long time and just a goal that we all have, you know, to be able to live a well, loved and meaningful marriage. So this episode from After Cana is an interview with Blythe Fike, a mother of 12. And she's being interviewed by one of the hosts, Emily, on kind of that postpartum season and how to handle all of that. So I hope you enjoy and be sure to check out the After Cana podcast wherever you listen to your own podcasts.
Welcome to After Cana, a Ferris Love podcast dedicated to exploring the vocation of marriage. I'm your host, Emily, and today we have Blythe Fike to demystify the world of postpartum seasons. Blythe is a wonderful mother of 12. She has gone through varying pregnancies and postpartum experiences. Super excited to talk to Blythe today and get to the root of the postpartum experience, but also the greater experience of leaning into femininity in particular seasons and what it means to be human. So I'm very excited to welcome Blythe Fike to the show. Enjoy.
Okay, well, hello, Blythe.
Amy, thanks for having me.
I am so excited today to have an interview with Blythe Fike. Mother of 12 children now, a woman who has given birth, I guess, is it considered 12 times? Yes.
I guess, yeah. So through 11 pregnancies, but 12 individual people.
Because we have some twins in the lineup.
Yeah, we have twins in the mix.
So I just want to give Blythe the floor really quickly to just describe experiences she's had in pregnancy and just kind of like give a little bit of like a history.
Okay, I'll try to be succinct because there is a lot of them. But yeah, so I'm a mother of 12. I have 12 children.
I love it.
There's 12 of them. My eldest is 18. And our youngest is almost 5 months old. So I had my first 8 kids within 11 years. I had a few miscarriages. So I've had 4 miscarriages total, which I think is probably appropriate to like throw that in the mix too, because that's real life. My number 10 and 11 are twins. And then we had a 3-year gap. And then we just had our 12th baby, baby Nico, who was born on Good Friday of this year. And the quick rundown of how I've like delivered them, I feel like I have really been able to experience the whole gamut, which I'm grateful for. I had 5 babies at home, and then I went to the hospital, and I had the rest of them in the hospital with medication. I wanted pain meds, so I went that route. So I've done like natural unmedicated, I've done medicated, and then my one of my twins was an emergency C-section. So I had my twins were born vaginally and C-section in the same little window of time. And then my 12th was a VBAC, which is a vaginal birth after cesarean. So I was able to go back to having our 12th vaginally and not do a C-section. So I feel like I've had all the experiences, and my recoveries have also been super varied. And
oh my goodness. Wait, yeah. This is awesome.
All right, I should be able to cover most of the bases.
I love that. And I think the best part of it is that like you're here, you're still standing. I think that so many women are very much afraid, probably historically, because birth is such an interesting period in a woman's life. But like just to have you here as like a person who has experienced a wide range of birthing experiences, like this is great. I'd love to just like dive into what that means for you as a woman, what that has meant for you as a mother, because I think that postpartum is rarely talked about for many reasons, obviously, because like when you're dating, you're kind of thinking about, other things as well. No, you're not really thinking about, because I also feel like, and you could probably go into this, like postpartum is very specific to your
Yeah,
pregnancy.
and I think women, I mean, at least for me, I got better over time, but I think there's so much focus on the pregnancy and then the birth that I think oftentimes postpartum becomes sort of an afterthought, and it's easy to forget that that's a really important time, a time that needs sort of planning and preparation too, just like the other windows of your whole pregnancy experience. And it should be sort of cared for in a special way. And I'd like to add too, like you mentioned, like I'm still standing. I think that I realized too that we all like have the gift of being able to share our experiences with other people. And that's like a real grace. So even though I'm sure there's a lot of listeners too that are thinking back over their birth experiences and being like, that was not ideal, or I really wish that wouldn't have happened, or there was trauma there. And I can relate, an emergency C-section is not ideal. The recovery was super brutal. But now that I'm sort of out of it, I realize, okay, no, this is still a gift because I'm really grateful that I can talk about all of it, like relate to women with all different experiences. And I think about that for my daughters too. Like, I don't know what their experiences are going to be someday having babies, if they're going to be easy or hard. It's a real good thing to have knowledge and even just camaraderie to like pass on to other women. So I'm grateful for all my experiences, even though they were not always ideal,
I love that. So you mentioned a little bit about people maybe putting a understandable focus on pregnancy. Can we talk a little bit about what does it really mean to prepare for postpartum?
It's hard because I think all women are super different, so I'll have friends that don't need the same things I feel like I need. And in that regard, it's something I think that needs to be lived to like get your head around what it needs to be. So when I had my first baby, I was 24. My husband like never changed a diaper. So it was a real culture shock. But I think that's probably true of everyone's first kid. Like you can't get it until you're in the middle of it. And then you're already in the middle of it. And then you're like, how do I do this when I don't know how to do it? And you're sort of fumbling through. But I think the key that I would encourage first-time moms to do is like really have their wits about them in a way, in terms of like what's working and what's not working, because you could still make little shifts in the middle of the postpartum period. An example that comes to mind is like, I was super eager, of course, to be a mother for the first time. One of the funniest examples of this to me is that I had like 0 to 3 month old baby jeans, which is like so stupid that I would think I was going to put my newborn into jeans. But I think that's like sort of indicative of just how excited I was to like dress her and do all the things as a mom. So a week after she was born, we went to visit my grandmother, who at the time was like in a nursing home. And of course, I was super excited for her to meet her great grandbaby, her first great grandchild. It was super beautiful. But I came home and I got a fever, like, and I was back in bed. And it was clear that my body was saying to me, you might be excited for all this neck, this stuff, but you have to give yourself time to recover or else you will be set back. But it was good for me to sort of acknowledge that and realize, like, okay, that was sort of a step too far. And now I have to pull back. And then my next baby, I could be a little more aware of, like, okay, I do need more time in bed, or I need to not put on the jeans, so to speak, and get back into life as soon as I maybe feel like I want to. And I think that's like physical, like your body needs it. I think it's mental. I think that also now that I've had a lot of kids, it's really sort of emotional for me to take all the time to sort of be tucked into bed with my baby. Because once I'm like back into the house, sort of back in my role, you really don't ever get that back again. Like you're in the family rhythm. You don't have the flexibility or the ability to just like put on your PJs at 1 p.m. and go crawl in bed with your newborn baby. And that really is such a sweet, like irreplaceable time that I now that means a lot to me too. Like, don't rush this time. Yes, because your body needs it. Yes, because you need to recover, but also because this is a time of bonding that you don't get to repeat. And that's like really special and necessary too. All that to say, I think it's taken time to like develop my own confidence too. And like, no, I need this and it's okay to ask for that. I think it's good for women that are having their first babies to at least give themselves space to develop whatever those needs might be. So get some meals lined up for people to bring you. You know, if your husband has paternity leave, cash it in. If you don't have paternity leave, maybe rotate some help through the house so that you can have the space to rest as much as you find that you need to be resting.
Yeah, and then I guess like whatever that rest looks like is very unique to
Totally,
the,
totally.
yeah, even probably unique to the amount of kids at home too.
Yes. Yeah, it's like sort of like always shifting, you know? And I think it's good to know that there's like good rest and like productive rest and unproductive rest. So really trying to like set yourself up for success to rest well and to model that. Like that something that struck me, I think I was in my fifth pregnancy. I was seeing a midwife at the time and I was pretty sick that pregnancy and I was having a hard time allowing myself just to be sick and to rest. And she brought up this point to me that like we really need to model good rest for our kids, because I think especially in American culture, you know, we're so active that it's really hard for us to feel like resting is productive. And so her advice to me was like, learn how to rest well, like get a cup of tea, have a good book, like put on a fresh pair of pajamas, whatever you need to do that's not sort of like the doom scroll, I never like got up and brushed my teeth kind of rest that can make you feel worse, but also sort of look worse in the home when you have other kids around that are like, when you need to rest or if you're sick or whatever, you're still sort of modeling how to do that well in front of your other children. And that's like an important aspect too.
Wow, there's so many things here. Do you feel like you've had to teach yourself what restful activities really were? Like, did you know what those were for you?
No. No, I didn't. And I think that for whatever reason, I had an unideal image of like that resting equaled laziness, you know, or that it equaled inactivity instead of just pivoting to a different sort of activity. Like resting can still be active. It's just a different sort of, it's like a reframe of activity, I think. So I did have to learn that. I did have to learn that, no, this is really good. Like learning to sort of speak your body's language, not to sound too woo-woo about it, but to like, really feel what your body's asking of you. Like, am I getting a headache? Did I drink enough water? How was my sleep? Did I look at my phone too much? You know, I've had postpartums. I mean, this is like humbling to admit where I've just looked at my phone so much that I've gotten tension headaches because my neck is like cocked because you're like nursing a baby, you're just kind of stuck in bed. It's really hard to not just pivot to technology and it's so accessible, obviously. So it's all come to with like little moments of taking a step back, like, okay, this isn't working, this is working, and sort of, I think, just not being so stuck either in your own habits or in a place of guilt where you think, I've already sort of like screwed this up by wasting so much time here because I feel bad. I can't possibly do better. And not being in that mindset, thinking like, okay, no, I can just start fresh with a new perspective, even if it's the same day, you know, or the same postpartum period. Like tomorrow is going to be different. I'm going to wake up, I'm going to get changed, I'm going to whatever, make this like nutritious breakfast. But just not being stuck, I think, is really key.
I'm sure that there is always like this idea that like our bodies remember. So even probably in between pregnancies, you probably remember what your postpartum experience felt like on your body the last time when you're going into like a new experience. What you were saying about like trying to figure out ways to like live that restfully, I'm sure your body feels better and like remembers, probably feels less dread in the future when you remember like, oh, you can't actually live this healthily. And then I remember what it felt
Totally.
like when it didn't happen like that.
Yeah, even in like really basic ways, I think that's so accurate. Like when I would have home births, so when you have a home birth, like the care is really on whoever's in the home taking care of you. I mean, you know, you don't have like a hospital stay where you're getting meals 3 times a day. Like you have a baby and then your midwife is there for a few hours to sort of make sure that everything is looking good and everything's sort of under control, and then leaves. And then you have your husband or your mom or your friends or whoever's there and your kitchen and your food. So it takes like a different sort of element of game planning. But something I remember so specifically is that my husband always make a smoothie after I had a baby, because you're sort of like you're super exhausted, but you sort of have like this endorphin rush, but you're hungry, you haven't been eating, but you're feel a little dehydrated. Like, I feel like a smoothie for me was always like a little bit sweet, really hydrating. It wasn't like a lot to digest or whatever, like not like a heavy meal. But this is pivoting to miscarriage, but after I had my first miscarriage, I craved a smoothie. And it was such a, I think that was it. It was like my body kind of remembering, like, this is a quick way to get some, like, to replenish some nutrients and maybe even like an emotional, maybe there's like a little bit of a comfort there of like my body still went through something, like a little mini birth. I still sort of need the same care. And to not neglect that even in loss, you know?
And I love this because I feel like it's kind of pivoting to a point that I wanted to expand on with you about what it means to like live a very human season. How to, I guess, integrate healthy states of mind. And also, I mean, we talked about rest, proper ways to heal, because it is like a wound that happens. And when we lean into like the needs of our human nature in these seasons, like you're also helping yourself like live more into your femininity, live more into your humanity. How can that launch you into like a deeper sense of purpose and a deeper sense of like your own humanity? It's a bigger question.
That's such a good question. I think that it's sort of about identity, you know, that the more we ponder ourselves and like who we are in front of God, like who he made us to be and what he made us to do, is all sort of sharpening our own perception of who we are. Sometimes that's like totally just contemplative, where we're just in prayer, sort of asking God to help us to see who we are, like who we ought to be, what our path is. And that sort of refines our understanding of self as a child of God. And I think sometimes physical things happen to us that we have to just participate in. And sometimes unwillingly, like sometimes we're like, I don't want this C-section recovery. I do not want it, but here I am. So how do I live in it well so that I can sort of soak in all of the knowledge and all the grace that God is offering to me in this time in my life. And maybe that's kind of the key, is that like God is so good to us and he's so close to us and he's a father. So whatever he's offering to us or allowing to happen to us is still like a roadmap to his love for us, and also a roadmap to our true self. And so instead of like pushing against that, you know, pushing against an unideal circumstance, thinking more like, okay, what do you have for me here? You know, like what do you have to show me? And being really open to whatever that is. Now, I would like to add that in moments of, for instance, I don't want to make this all about C-sections, but that's just my most striking experience. It's not like in that moment I was so lucid and aware that I was like praying, like, Lord, that I may see. You know, I was really just surviving. I ended up having to go back into the hospital when the twins were a few days old for a blood transfusion. I was super weak. I had two babies to care for. So, you know, I'm like, you're recovering from major surgery and you have two. Like, it's not just one baby, it's two babies that need to be fed and need to be held and diapers changed and all this stuff. And for what it's worth, I had tons of help and it was fine. But in those moments, I wasn't like super perceptive, but I don't think of what God was trying to show me or what he was trying to give me. But this is like the grace of God, that it's even like retroactive, you know, that I think that even the ability to pause after a situation and to look back and say, like, oh wow, that you were there, and this is maybe why you gave that to me. And maybe those answers aren't revealed like for many, many years, but I think part of our humanity is to just be lived with openness to God's call for our lives, and the greater impact, like the larger impact, and trusting too that it will probably unfold over our lifetime. Like going back to this idea of modeling for my daughters, you know, I am sure there are circumstances that I still sort of haven't figured out why they happened, but I do trust in God's love for me and I trust in his divine will. And I'm sure some of those will be played out for them, like in some odd way, you know, where I needed an experience in my life so that I could be there for them in their experiences as women. So anyway, I don't know if that's answering the question, but I think that this idea of identity, purpose, experience, they're all valuable. And even if the answers are not right in front of us, it's like trusting that as a woman, I am meant to have these feminine experiences that are very unique and very sort of hard. I don't know, sometimes heartbreaking, but that's all sort of a part of the picture that God is ordained for my life, and that it's maybe just my job to be open to them and grateful for them, even if in the moment I don't really see why or how, you know.
And I can really see this like tying into the general idea of helpful and harmful states of mind that together. And I wonder, like, did you ever feel like your mind was playing tricks on you, like in terms of like your emotions are at an all-time high in the state of mind?
Yes.
I can even imagine God in his wisdom giving you twins after so many pregnancies where you had to learn to ask for help, so that in one big way, when you probably had to ask for like so much help,
Yeah.
you were able to feel confident doing that. Like,
Totally.
I love that you're also speaking about like having a lot of compassion for yourself because you're going through each unique postpartum experience. So if you want to speak about any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you hit it on the head, like helpful, harmful mindset, I think that is built like on the off season. You know, so pregnancy throws us for a loop in a million ways, like physically, mentally, emotionally, hormonally, like you're touching on hormones, like hormones after when you're pregnant, while you're giving birth, after you have a baby are, it's like a different beast that you don't know what it's going to be. It's unpredictable. You don't sort of know if you're yourself or if you're not yourself. Like, I feel like there's a lot in the mix, but I think that who you like, the person that you work on when you're not in those seasons is probably the like groundwork for when you're in the seasons. So it's like, am I living a life of prayer? Am I trying to often like consider that I'm a child of God? Am I somebody who tries to live with a supernatural outlook? Like, do I really try to accept the things that kind of go sideways in the day, even in simple ways, are still a gift from God, and there's still like something good for me to find there? I think in the moments in my life where I was trying hard to sort of flex those muscles when I wasn't pregnant, then I could enter into that season with a better mindset, and like you said, more helpful mindset versus harmful. I think what's harmful is like victimization and feeling sorry for yourself, because there will be a lot for you to feel sorry about. And it's easy to make yourself the victim. It really is, because it's really hard. So the more we can sort of prep with just becoming like stronger women, I think, and more courageous and more unafraid, then when we are in those rickety spaces where hormones are at play and these things that we can't quite like control, maybe, I think we can live with like a greater aspect of openness to God's will. And even if it's just like resignation, like, okay, I trust you. I don't know what this is, and my brain isn't even like functional enough to get it or to pray, but I trust you.
I love this. Let's dive in to like knowing what you know now for, and it seems as if you've even gone through a journey in your own marriage toward like being able to ask for help and like seeing your own husband grow into the father that he is now that he's father of 12. What is some like general advice that you would have for those who are dating, maybe some qualities that aren't there yet, because obviously a man becomes a father when he becomes a father, but like some qualities to look for in dating that you think were kind of like the beginning of seeing that character.
You're so smart to say like these things are undeveloped because that's 100% true. Like no woman should be disillusioned and think that like all these character traits are going to be in max capacity when you're dating, because this is like a lifetime of learning and of growth. And my marriage has definitely shape-shifted over 20 years now, and like our partnership has changed as our family has grown and as our needs have changed. So I think that the things about Kirby, my husband, that I saw really clearly when I was dating, that I see that thread like continued through our marriage. Well, one, I would say like flexibility, somebody who can really roll with punches and do it with optimism, positive outlook. I think when we were dating, Kirby was so fun and he was really serious, but he was really fun and he was really flexible. And if plans changed, he was just the kind of guy that was like, okay, great, plan, like, let's, like, what's next? Like, everything was adventure and nothing got him down. And I see that now, like, oh my gosh, that. You know, that was maybe put into play with like, are we going to go to the pier tonight or are we going to go to a concert? Like superficial things. Or a friend who like stayed later to chat or that called him and said, hey, can you get together? And it was unplanned, but he knew, oh, like this person needs a friend. So I'm going to give my time away to this person. Like I look at our family now and our marriage and I think like, oh my gosh, could I imagine my life with someone who couldn't roll with the punches? Like absolutely not. It would be such a hard life, but it's not a hard life. Like on paper it's a hard life, but I think because my husband has that sort of flexibility and like an upbeat attitude, we've just been able to roll with it. And I think I've been able to roll with it, which it's really hard, I think, for women, again, with all the physical aspects at play, like biology doing its thing, to not feel like your life is over or to not feel like we're never going to make it. I've had those feelings. When I found out I was pregnant with our seventh, our sixth son was only 4 months old when I found out I was pregnant with our seventh baby. And I locked myself in the bathroom crying and called him at work. And it was like, it was the baby where everything had to change. Like we had to get a new car. Like we were like maxed out. And then number seven, like, maxed us out in a new way.
Which baby was this?
Frankie is number seven.
Okay.
But I mean, I called him and he was like, and I'm sure he had a million worries like flying through his head. Like, I gotta make more money. I've gotta like figure out how to support this family. But what he was able to give to me in that moment was like, this is fine. Like, this is fine. And he said that to me 100,000 times, you know, about a million things. This is fine. We're gonna be fine. And so that to me is like a quality that I could not, I don't think we could do this without. Another quality that I would say is like real heroic. Like he's so faithful. Faithfulness. Faithfulness to conviction. When we were dating, you know, he was just a man of his word. If he said he was going to do something, he did it. If he said we were not going to do something, we didn't do it. He made sure that we stay totally pure. Like he made sure of that. He made sure that when I needed to get home, I got home. He made sure that when he said he was going to be someplace, he was there. He didn't falter. And again, I think that was mostly lived out. I mean, some like really important things like chastity for sure, but like it was also really lived out in superficial ways, like the simplicity of everyday life. But I could lean on him. I could really trust him because I knew that he was going to do what he said he was going to do. And I think that trust that I had in him when we were dating is like really the trust that's carried me through our whole life. Because in a little way, I mean, I feel like I've been a little bit like the balloon at the party, like when you like let the air out and it like flies around the room. Because 12 babies is a lot. Like my body's been through a lot and I'm strong. Like I feel like I'm a strong woman. Like I can really handle it. We have a lot of fun. Like I'm not beat down by our life. But I've certainly been like thrown through the loop over and over and over again. So I think to have my husband be stable and sure has been like, he's just been a rock, you know? So I would say like date a guy that is a rock, you know, who you can count on.
Oh, I love that. Were you a person who like read a bunch of books about these things? And if so, do you have any book recommendations for those who are, are you like, no, life's just gonna
No.
happen.
I mean, I
Life.
feel like that's like ever shifting too, you know? So like I feel like when I first had babies, I was really into birth and what is the body doing and how can you support the body and all these things. And then I feel like as my kids got older and like problems got more real and more difficult, then I started being curious about parenting. Like, okay, how do we actually do this? I love a good podcast. I would say recently, like something that has been very helpful to me having a wide range of kids, there's a great podcast called The Golden Hour. Well, I actually think they changed the name. It's just the Optimal Work podcast. It was called The Golden Hour. They did a whole series on parenting, like a 5-part series. That was awesome. So I'd recommend that. The Meg Meeker books are great. Strong fathers, strong daughters, strong mothers, strong sons. I would also recommend Rosa, What's Your Secret by Rosa Pick, who is a Spanish mother of 18, and she's crazy and amazing.
Just a plug for everyone listening. We do have an interview with her on the Ferris Love podcast.
Oh,
So
yeah. Oh, no, girl. You know, I
I'll
listen
link
to that.
that for
I
everybody.
love her. I'm her biggest fan. I'm such a fangirl of Rosa.
You're almost there.
No, I will never be Rosa. She's incredible. Oh, all the Jim Stenson books. Parenting books by Jim Stenson. But I am also like, I love a good feedback loop. So I think any woman in my life that is a step ahead of me or doing something that I wish I was doing, don't hesitate to reach out to the people in your periphery and get help. You know, not just help in the moment, but like help in parenting, help in strategizing for what's best for individual kids, for how to live family life, for how to structure family life. And that's another thing that's always shifting. You know, you bring a new baby into the house, it's like everyone sort of has to step up and figure out how to handle a little bit more. And that's why I say, like, my twins at 10 and 11 were ultimately such a gift because I had like four people who knew how to put a toddler in bed with a bottle. Like, you get flexible and you learn how to pivot, but then your kids also do too. And I think that is part of the reason why big family life is really such a gift because it's a teaching tool all the time to yourself, to your kids, for your marriage. And the only key is really just to be like open to it and receptive to. I was thinking about what you said about like resources. And I think that, you know, I was trying to figure out my why, you know, why certain things have really struck me, like for instance, the Rosa Pick book. And I think that is because, I mean, you can have like technical support, right? Like we can get help with the temperaments, you know, trying to figure out how to parent our kids in particular ways, how to handle disciplinary situations. And all that is good. And we should really be getting as much as we can out of the resources that are available to us and out of the wisdom of so many others that have gone before us. But I also think there is something to be said for just learning how to be happy, like in whatever circumstance, you know? And I think that is why Rosa, at least, was such a gift to me of like this life, family life, whether you have one kid or 20 is not just meant to be figured out. Like it's not just technical, you know? It's meant to be lived, like really lived and lived really happily, especially if we want our kids to feel like they have a mission in the world or they can have some greater purpose. I think that if I want my kids to like listen to anything I say, I better be a happy mom. Or else then what is it for, you know? And like, how am I going to have any credibility with them if I'm miserable in our life or if I'm just getting through it? I mean, that's not to say that we've not had really hard times and times that have felt really like we're just getting through it. But I think overall, a search for finding real joy and being a cheerful mother in spite of chaos, in spite of hardship, in spite of physical, you know, ailments or whatever, like handicaps, the handicaps of pregnancy and postpartum and all these things. The key is like, yes, God, you gave this to me, but you also gave it to me for my happiness. And I can find it. Like it's there and I can find it, you know?
And I love that you're bringing this up because I feel like at the end of the day, like all of these things work together toward your unique journey as Blythe and mother.
Totally.
Yeah, influence the way that you're uniquely called to live out your own vocation as a mom, too.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. Bringing up the why is the reason for the rest. Like right now, as to my understanding, your mom has the kids, the baby is down so that we could have this interview. And
Totally.
like the why is like almost encouragement to live out the rest, the health, the healing,
Yes.
sleeping because you know it'll make you happier. And I love this idea that it needs to be lived.
Yes. Yes. No, I think that again, I think this is like another gift, at least for me, of having a big family, is it has helped me to think more in terms of the whole. Like for instance, the baby sleeping and the kids, my mom having a few of my toddlers, is like when I had just one or two or even three, it was very easy to orient like my habits and my parenting towards that specific child. And that can become really overwhelming really quick. So it's like as soon as the scales were set, sort of tipped for me with like too many kids, whatever that is, I was able to shift to thinking about like the whole, like what do we all need here? And that actually helped me to have a better perspective of myself. I need to be well rested in order to be dot dot dot. You know, I need to exercise. I need to take care of my prayer life. I need to have time out with my husband. I need to go have a margarita. Like I need to have a friendship, conversation with a friend. Like all these things that help, like my mentality began to shift to like the greater good versus how do I provide for you as an individual, like every possible need. So it helped me figure out naps. You know, my babies need to nap for them, but also for the whole family, because I have a conversation with you that I want to get to. I want to go read a book. I'm going to go take a walk, whatever. Like letting go maybe of the sort of restrictive standards or ideals that we can impose on ourselves for what our family has to look like. And for me, it was sort of getting to the point of max stress that helped me be free of those standards and think like, no, this is just about our family. You know, we're not gonna fall like we're not gonna look like any other family. We're just gonna look like us. And we're gonna make the right decisions for us based on who we are, who our kids are, and ultimately what God is like asking of our family. And that's very free.
Yeah, and I feel like ultimately I love that we're getting to this conversation on a podcast like this, that its entire purpose is to prepare people for marriage and to bring on like couples and experts to kind of like give people like the lowdown so that we do these things correctly. I just love that the point that we're kind of like getting at here is just that it's a beautiful, unique journey that when called to live, you don't really need to prepare for it in a specific way other than to just be open to how it will unfold.
And to know, like, to have a lot of faith that you can do it. Like you can't do it. Like my life on paper does not make any sense. It really doesn't. Like I did not come from a big family. I'm a convert. I didn't even know big families. Like I didn't understand any part of this, and neither did my husband. And I also, when we had a first, like our first few kids, I looked at families like mine, and I thought, like, there's no way I'm going to be that lady. Like I am not going to be that lady. And now I am that lady. And I'm super happy and like my marriage is really good. And that's not because we are perfect. It is not because like we have the magic, like we have the, there's no magic here. Like it, but it can be done. You know, it takes work, it takes effort, it takes a lot of time, sort of like replenishing the tanks in your own life, which I think like first. The first of that is like your spiritual life, you know, really taking care of it, which is also not easy when you're a mom. Like, it's not easy to find time to pray or to like get yourself out of bed a little bit earlier to get some spiritual reading done or whatever it is, or to avail yourself to confession or to spiritual direction or whatever. All the things that I have found that I actually just need in order to do this quasi well. It's like I think sometimes when you look at women, and maybe I did this too, like you idealize a woman who's doing a lot and just think the only reason she's doing a lot is because she is like a superwoman. And I think the truth is that like I have just put in more work in all these other areas so that I can do this well, like so that I can be happy, so that I can love my husband and like enjoy my marriage. Like it's not, it doesn't just happen to me. It happens with work and effort and a lot of faith, but it's possible.
Wow. Well, I wonder if you have any closing thoughts, big picture advice that you'd like to give. Because I know that we've talked about how, at the end of the day, like it is a unique experience.
Well, one thing that comes to mind that might be sort of going back to a previous conversation or a question is just that, like, to not underestimate what's happening to your body when you have a baby. And this was advice of another midwife who was told me once, like, and you said this, which I think is really perceptive, like, there's a wound inside of you that needs healing. It's actually the size of a dinner plate.
Whoa.
And I know, which is like, whoa, like I think it's easy. I think pregnancy can sometimes be so hard. And again, this is different for everyone. For me, pregnancy is so hard that when I'm done being pregnant, I feel like I'm alive again, like I'm a new woman. And I have to conscientiously tell myself through like a list of facts. And sometimes that even helps, like write it out. Like I have a wound the size of a dinner plate inside of my body. Here are the things that I need to recover. I need rest. I need nutrition. I need quiet. Like I need all these things, and that's not selfish, and that's not bad. Like this is good. And it's good to get into the habit of giving yourself what you need when you need it, in terms of like within reason. I had this the same midwife said to me. She said, when you lie down, all the blood leaves your extra, or like the blood kind of pools in the center of your body and brings white blood cells and like everything you need to heal inside your body. When you stand up and you walk around, the blood then circulates down through all your limbs and it sort of abandons where you need it the most. So that visual was super helpful for me to realize, like, hey, laying down is not like I'm not being lazy, which again, I think it's just kind of an American mindset. I think it's really hard to like take a nap or rest and not see that as being unproductive or whatever. So I would just put that out there for anyone that needs to hear it. And also, this is so silly, but like, reach out to me. I don't know. I really want to be a friend to anybody who's like going through this for the first time or doesn't have like a mother. Like, I don't like to think that I'm becoming old, but I am truly like becoming an old lady. It's really hard to go through this alone. It's hard to go through it for the first time. It's hard to go through it for the 10th time. And it's really good to have people in your life that you can just like shoot a quick text to and say, I don't know what to do. What do I do? So I am here in the world to be available if anyone needs me as a friend. And another thing that I would say is just talk a lot with your husband because it's been great to like game plan with each other. And have our vision for our family be like we're on each other, like hard on the kids, easy on each other.
Wow.
So be like, we are each other's advocates. And I have like almost never felt more love in my life than the moments when I hear my husband like lock me in the door, lock me in the room when I have a new baby. And like, can hear him like yelling at the kids from the inside of the house, leave her alone. He installed a lock, like a deadbolt on our door before I had our seventh. He's created like visitation schedules for the kids to like only come and see me for 10 minutes at a time. He doesn't complain when I know the house is falling apart when I have a baby. Like, he doesn't let me into the world of chaos that is clearly like naturally ensuing when a mom is like laid up for however long after she has a baby. So, for all the guys out there, I would say this is like a real gift to give your future spouse is like just protect her, Because women naturally like will feel the guilt of the home and want to jump back in as soon as possible. I still battle with that. Like I still think like maybe I should do a load of laundry. But it's good to have a strong man in your corner just telling you to knock it off
Oh my gosh.
and to go back to bed, you know?
That's amazing. And yeah, I keep on coming back to this thought that I've had recently about, like, I think this was a point that John Milton wrote about in Paradise Lost, where Adam's greatest sin was that he couldn't protect Eve from herself.
Wow.
So just like this idea of, like, men having the capacity to protect women who are vulnerable naturally, who
Totally.
about this, like, yeah.
That is so good. And I think that's like another key element is when you were like reviewing some of the questions with me about like, or this idea of what to look for in a future spouse, or what sort of signifiers there can be to like a really good partner in having babies with. I mean, I think one of the things, at least for my husband, is his strength. Like, I'm an emotional person. I can play into my emotions. Like, I can feel sorry for myself. I can overanalyze. Like, I think to have somebody who's sort of strong enough and unafraid to say, like, you're spinning right now, stop spinning, or this is fine. Like, whatever you think is like, to not like get. I have this great friend who tells me, when people are being emotional, like to not get on the roller coaster is her analogy for me. And I feel like my husband does that for me. Like he doesn't get on the roller coaster with me, which is so grounding. Like to have someone strong enough in your life to protect you from yourself sometimes and to kind of set you straight, you know?
Wow, I love that. I think this is so helpful, even
Good.
for all those girls out there who are dating, but also for women who are about to come into, I mean, someone could be pregnant. I mean,
Yeah.
a boy or a man could be like reconciling with being a father for the first time. So I love your
Totally.
advice for the men as well.
Yes. Just don't, like, there's no fear in this, you know? Like, this is such an awesome path. Again, like, I think God's sort of blown my mind with what he chose to do with my life. It was not something that I necessarily chose for myself. It's just sort of what has happened to me. But it is clearly the path. Like it's what I'm supposed to do. And so I think like fearlessness, openness, and a lot of hope that it's going to be good, you know? It's going to be really good.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Blythe, for spending
Thanks for having me.
time. I'm so happy that we could have this extended chat. And thank you, everyone, for listening to this After Cana episode. More to come, and maybe more of Blythe at some point.
Yeah, and put my like email in the show notes or something. I'm totally open to that. If people want to reach out, I'm here.
Yay, a mother to all. It doesn't
Thanks
at 12. It doesn't stop at 12. All
for
right.
having me. This was so great.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.